Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and this interview was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For the latest news and terms and conditions, go to ukwineshow.co.uk. Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and I'm here with Tony Lathwaite from Direct Wines. How are you, Tony?
Very well. How are you?
I'm very good indeed. A nice wee trip out to lovely Henley out here. I've only been out here once to watch the rowing years ago. I'm an old rower from way
back. You look like you probably were a rower, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Lightweight, though. It doesn't look it now. What we thought we'd do is have we chat about your business, the mail order business, and a wee bit about the history of Lathwaite's. But do you want to just give us a quick overview of what Direct Wines are?
Well, it's a family-owned business. It's quite old now. Well, the family's quite old. 40-odd years. It's grown. We're quite important now. We calculate we've got about a million customers. And by that, I mean, you know, real customers, people who are, like, ordering regularly, which is
not bad.
A lot. And that's around the world. We're still largely UK-based. That's where we started. But we're growing very fast in the United States. Mm-hmm. There will be our turnover there. It's gone over the $100 million mark. We're over £350 million, sorry, globally. And was about 800 of us.
Yep. And that's all mail order, isn't it?
Online.
Online as well.
Online's, you know, the big thing. Mm-hmm. So I'm not quite certain of the split these days between offline and online, but the online's growing all the time.
Yeah, sure. Okay. What I'd like to do is just explore some of the early beginnings with Lathwaite's. It originally wasn't called Lathwaite's or Wines Direct. It was Bordeaux Direct, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was called Bordeaux Direct.
What were you doing before you got into the wine trade?
I was at college.
Oh, okay.
I've never done anything else. Actually, it's when I left school, I went to Bordeaux. I've put the story on my blog recently. But basically, for various reasons, as a student, I went to Bordeaux and got a job, ultimately, in a winery, just bottle washing and stuff.
Yep.
And in 1965, and I loved it. I didn't love the bottle washing, but I loved the way of life and everything, and the wine, I suppose. But the people, really, I really fell for them. I've, you know, never really wanted to leave, and in fact, I haven't. We still basically are based in France, in the same village, Saint Colombe. So, what happened? Well, I kept going back. I did a geography dissertation. You know, I did on the wines of that area, looked at it a bit and thought, maybe there's a business here. Couldn't get jobs. Very unsuccessful getting jobs with anybody else. So the guy, Monsieur Cassin, my mentor, who ran the cellar I worked at, one day said, well, why don't you just start selling our wine? Oh, brilliant idea, yes. Got all excited and yeah. Sort of came back and started sending out letters to people. From the beginning, it was to do with writing to people. Mm-hmm. Wrote a letter, sent it to 100 people, got two responses, which depressed me at the time, but actually a pretty good going.
2% is good.
2% is good. I didn't know that at the time.
Yeah.
But, you know, they both went and gave them tastings private people. Oh, no, okay. I've never really done much trade. I tried it and in the early days, but, you know, I kind of pulled out of it because they never paid me. So
that's the story these days, isn't it?
So I stuck with private customers, and I like private customers.
Yeah. So what was that, 1960?
69 was when I started,
yeah. Yep.
Just in the autumn. And then it was pretty pathetic, but I was lucky, you know, tiny volumes, but my mum and dad let me stay at home and fed me, and so, you know, it went on. But by word of mouth, you know, I got people to, they were kind. I think they bought from me out of pity. And then they, but then they sort of say, oh, you know, go and you could try him and try them. And so I started doing a few more. And it did gradually mount up. And then I had the brilliant idea that instead of shipping the stuff the old way, you know, and waiting for the dockers to nick most of it, I'd get a van.
Yeah.
And some growers put up 200 quid each, which was quite a lot of money in those days. Five growers and me, and that bought, and my grandmother, she gave me 200 quid. And bought a van, and that meant I could drive to Bordeaux and get it, because it just started the roll-on, roll-off ferries, you know. And that was just wonderful, because that meant I got to go back and see all my mates and friends. And so I would go around doing sales tastings for a month, and then leap in the van and sort of turn the stereo up and rock,
down.
Rolling Stones down.
No central heating or cooling at that stage, so it must have got pretty warm in the van at times.
No, I didn't really normally travel in the summer, funny enough. No. I did once, though, put a cheese in the back and on a fairly... I went to Alsace, because I started going to other regions after Bordeaux. It was the time this Alsace producer gave me a Munster cheese. And that was a fairly warm trip back, and I put the cheese in the back. But it got me through customs, tomorrow. Because the customs men then were forever having me out. They were so suspicious.
Was it legit at that stage?
What do you mean? It's always been legit.
Well, I mean, like some people, you were a white van man going off, bringing wines back to
sell.
Yeah,
but that's recent. Back then, this was way before any of that. No, you had to do your paperwork. You had to pay the duty.
Oh, okay.
At one point, I had to do it because there was nobody will remember, but in the 70s, Britain was in a very bad way. Yeah. And there was a limit on how much you could only take 50 pounds sterling abroad. And you had to put a deposit down for every import you did. And I didn't have the money for that. But luckily, under 50 pounds worth of import, you didn't have to do that. So I had to do a customs declaration for every single case I brought in. I had to sit on the ferry overnight. I'd write out 100 customs declarations and then hand those into the customs, because they weren't very amused by that, so they would order an outturn.
So what, you're trying to avoid paying, going over 50 pounds?
Yeah, because I could pay the duty. Obviously, I had to pay the duty, but I didn't have the money to put a deposit down at 50% of the value of what I was importing. No way could I do that. So I got under the radar. I mean, it was legal, but it was just an awful lot of paperwork and a few issues with the customs officers. And but the time I brought the Munster cheese back, they didn't want to go in the van.
That was a nice blue one.
Oh God! Have you ever had Munster cheese?
No. Is it a type of cheese?
It's the stinkiest cheese on the planet.
Really?
And you know, it had been a warm trip. I had it in the cab with me for the first part. I put it in the back with the wine.
Yeah.
I don't think it contaminated the wine. Well, nobody ever said it did. So,
yeah.
But it certainly kept the customs officers out.
Just the thing for sort of illegal smugglers.
Yes,
in the future. You need a bit of cheese from Alsace and you're away. No problems there at all.
Right. No.
When was this, when you started going into other regions rather than just Bordeaux?
Well, that would have been a couple of years down the track. We got ourselves some premises. Barbara, my wife, we got together about 71, and she saw what a state... I was having a great time, but I mean, I wasn't making any money. And it looked like I never would, because, well, I didn't do accounts for starters. I didn't know what accounts were. I didn't. So she gave up a good job and came and worked with me, and she sorted all that stuff out. And we got this arch at Windsor, railway arch, and we put the wine in there and opened it up as a warehouse, mm-hmm. I think. You know, this was in 1972, so I reckon that was an early wine warehouse. And just piles of cases. Customers loved it.
Yeah.
And that really sort of started going up quite seriously then. And
so it was a shop then almost, wasn't it? Really?
It was a pre-Majestic Majestic. They'd come and I'd do tastings, standing around, and then take the cases off. It was really going very well. And then we had a bit of a bombshell, because then the Sunday Times came along.
Oh, yeah. Were you still called Bordeaux Direct?
We were still called Bordeaux Direct.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. We stayed as Bordeaux Direct up until 98, I think.
And Sunday Times, obviously a key part of the business, because that's where you really went mail order almost. But how did you get the connection with the Sunday Times?
I wrote a letter, cheeky letter to the editor. Probably the best thing I've ever done. They'd just done one of their exposés of what was going on. It was not uncommon back then. This is pre-UK being in the common market. For all the rules to do with appellation control, they didn't apply over here.
Yep.
So basically, you know, your wine merchant was on his honour. that what he sold as Nuit Saint-Georges actually was Nuit Saint-Georges. But they found, you know, they found people who weren't doing that. There was this expose on some guy in Essex and Ipswich, I think it was. So I wrote and said, you know, well done, Sunday Times, thank you very much. Here am I. I joined the wine trade expecting I would be living in St. James's wearing pinstripe suit, and, you know, and I'm stuck under a damp railway arch because some of my competitors are up to tricks at, like, Prohibition America. And so it's tough. You know, it's a bit, well, it was very tongue-in-cheek. But he printed it, Harry Evans. He printed it and he put our address on as well, which is unusual. And we got 2,000 letters. So clearly there was a pent-up frustration, I think, that actually back then the wine trade, which was very not at all like today. I mean, supermarkets weren't doing wine.
Yeah,
there were the big chains of high street off licenses, but basically it was very big groups that were doing it all, and they would ship it from big group in France, big group here, bottling it in the UK. People were also starting to travel, and when they travelled abroad, they tasted stuff over in France, and hang on, this doesn't taste like what we get back in the UK. Because the UK bottlers would, I never found out what it was they did, but they did do something strange to the wine. And it never, I'm not talking very top chateaus, but people felt that they weren't getting the real stuff. And here's my little spiel about how I went over and got it myself direct from people. And they really, they went for that. And a customer of mine said, well, why don't you ask the Sunday Times if you know, you could do a special offer for their readers? Because they did that sort of thing. Well, us under a railway arch, you're kidding. And he said, no, I'll ring them up. And he did, and lo and behold, yeah, they did do a special offer with us, what they called Instant Seller. And it went fantastically well. They were really pleased. It went more than twice the volume that anything else they'd ever done.
Were they getting a slice of the action?
Oh, yeah. You know, all the reader offers things, that's how it, you know, it's very important to them these days. So we did another one, and that went as well. It's about 5,000 cases, I think. You know, oh, which for us,
yeah,
an arch that couldn't contain more than 2,000 cases. We were all over the place. We had to sort of rent temporary cellars, and it was day and night for. But we got it all out, and then this clever customer said, "Why don't we ask them to do a sort of make it permanent? How about a wine club? Because that rather than just doing separate offers, you could sort of have because customers would want maybe to have the same wine again.
Yeah,
it's a very much repeat order business house. I mean, 90-odd% of our orders are repeat, the second orders, you know. Well, that took us from fourth division south, you know, to the Premier League almost, because within months, I think, you know, we were like the number two direct selling wine operation after the Wine Society. They'd been there for 100 years or so,
yeah.
But we suddenly were number two.
Well, that's pretty good going.
So that changed our lives.
Mm. When was that, 1970?
That was 73 we started the wine club.
73, and then you, well, I presume you just moved bigger and bigger, more premises, more suppliers, is that the sort of process?
Yeah, you make it sound very easy.
It never is, is it?
There were lots of problems.
Yeah.
Anybody who's been in business knows rapid growth is potential disaster.
Yep.
But it was rapid growth. Our closeness to the growers, the trips, you know, the going to see the growers, knowing them all, and yep, sticking with them. Being as I'd been in the vineyards and lived there and walked, my impression was that the UK wine trade sort of thing was, you know, well, we go to a wine tasting, we taste all the wines and we pick the best, and that's what we have. And then, so it might change. One year we'll say we'll have his, and then we'll have his. No, I'd follow people every year. Okay, yeah. So you have a good year and you have a less good year. But, mm-hmm, you know, if you've picked really good growers, really, really passionate, the crazy ones, you know, then they never give you a bad wine.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or if they have a real disaster year, they'll tell you. And they won't mind if you don't buy it. But basically, so the close contacts meant that they supported us. So they gave us good credit. They gave us very good credit. When you consider a young English guy turns up in a van and says, can I have 40 cases of that, please? And can I pay you in 90 days? And then, yeah, disappears off in the... I mean, they've got to be quite trusting. They all knew... Well, mostly a lot of them knew each other, so it's not that big a world.
Yep.
So that cushioned the problem. So, we never had to sort of borrow a lot.
Yeah, I was going to say, because rapid growth normally means you've got cash flow issues.
Oh, we had cash flow issues. Oh, God, we did. We must have come within... We came within minutes of going pop. It was some very hairy incidents. I remember once the bank manager was waiting outside my flat door, and we had conversations with somebody who said, well, you know, sell to me and I'll sort it all out for you.
Sell the business?
Yeah. You know, Barbara and I, she's very tough, Barbara, and I'm quite stubborn. With the growers' help, we got through and we're still here. Touch wood.
And so that was sort of 70s. Obviously, the business has grown quite a bit. You started doing more and more wine clubs, wasn't it? It wasn't just the Sunday Times wine club. That was your main bread and butter for quite a while.
Oh, Sunday Times still is the it's the big one, and it still is. And you know, we got the Sunday Times wanted the president for it, and I suggested this. I'd heard about this guy called Hugh Johnson, Written a Wine Atlas, and thought it was a good book, and so they appointed him. And Hugh and I always got on. He's devoted to the wine club. He really is. It's very important for him. I mean, he writes books and so on and so forth. But, you know, you probably know how it is. It's all very well writing words, but you've got to know that people actually want to drink the stuff that you...
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and that means a lot. And that means a lot to him that he you know, helps us pick stuff. And then if it sells, well, he knows he's on the right track still.
It's true, though. And sometimes you do get quite disconnected with what people are drinking if you're not careful.
Ah, you do. Oh, you do. And you see people do that. Yeah. It's nothing to beat going out and giving what, you know, standing there and giving them a glass. And, well, hopefully you don't get an earful. You know, sometimes they bring you up. Sure. Yeah. Then you have to think again.
I think we'll wrap it up there, Tony. And next week we'll have a look at some of the stuff that's going on more in the future and currently now. All right. Thank you very much.
Pleasure.